everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I just want to remind you that if you like to listen to your author interviews on podcasts, you can go to the apps on your phone or tablet and look in SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Blueberry. We're everywhere. Go and check it out. You look for the Authors on the Air Network. With me tonight is world-famous author Joe Clifford, who just returned from a record-shattering book tour in Europe. Okay, well, it was Italy, but still, it was an amazing tour. He posted all these great pictures. People are so different in Europe when authors go to visit them, particularly in Italy. They love Americans in Italy, especially tatted-up cute guys like Joe Clifford. So Joe is here tonight to talk about his new book, The One That Got Away. Hey, Joe, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a while.
It has been. It has been. I think, well, we saw each other at BoucherCon, so it wasn't that far long ago. But so congratulations on the book tour. In all seriousness, you went to Italy because your book has an Italian publisher. And I looked at the photos that you posted, and your audiences were very engaged with you being there. They had all purchased the books ahead of time. They knew about the stories. Which book did you particularly talk about, or did you talk about all of your books?
Well, I mean, Lamentations is the one they translated, so that's what the tour was supporting. All the press, the junket, all that stuff was for Lamentation. I do have an offer from them to buy Junkie Love, which we'll be doing that in the fall, I think, going back to Italy and doing another tour for the Pisa Festival is what we're looking at right now. But yeah, Italy was great. I mean, the readers were surprised by how much of the text they'd taken in. I mean, they were asking me questions that they were about things I'd forgotten. In the book. They were really kind of scouring the pages and then coming up with some amazing observations, which was cool. It was great. But you know, after a while, you're like, geez, I forgot I even wrote that. I don't remember that. But yeah, no, it was a wonderful experience. I had a great time, and it was kind of crashing back to earth when the kids showed up and I had to change a diaper again. You know, it was 2 weeks of just feeling like a rock star, which is what I thought writing was always going to be like. And as you know, it's not.
It rarely is. So how did you communicate with the readers who showed up for your events? Obviously, you're in Italy. I'm assuming you were studying Duolingo, and you had some Italian phrases down. Did you have a translator with you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had some. I mean, I failed miserably at my Duolingo experience. Most of their lessons involve bears. Things that involve bears, and I didn't encounter any bears in Italy. And so, what I learned of Duolingo, I couldn't. I mean, I could ask like where the bread is and that kind of stuff. But
right.
The questions they start out on aren't really practical. I mean, Duolingo is awesome. I just don't think I got deep enough into it. But yeah, I translated Marty, who's my publisher. At Casa Sirio, he did most of the translating, but we had special, like, people would come, like Italian authors would get, like big Italian authors would come because they were fans of the book and they wanted to present me. And it was kind of trippy. It was really sort of nuts. I mean, if I didn't have my friend Rich there with me, who could verify some of the things that happened, I'd start to wonder if it really was kind of real. Cause you know, I just had a book launch the other day, which was a fine book launch. I mean, Tom Pitts came out, my good buddy Tom Pitts, but almost
right.
Everybody there was people I had to reach out to and be like, hey, I'm doing a book launch, can you guys show up? You know, a couple of guys that go golfing with, so like they all came, you know, and you got 15, 20 people, the people I picked by hand, you know, like we could have done
right.
This in my house for dinner. We didn't have to go to a bookstore and do it, and I could have given them the book, and I could have saved, like, you know, the $20 they spent, half of which goes to, not that I'm not grateful for book passes for hosting it, but you get my point.
Yes.
But this was like, yeah, I mean, the Italy thing, like the Casa Sirio just like promoted the hell out of it. And everywhere we went, it was packed houses and it was press and it was wonderful, man. It was a head trip. It was, you know, every writer needs that kind of ego boost. I mean, I probably need it more than most because I'm, you know, constantly looking for that sort of thing, but it was really cool is the point. And,
you were on the front page of one Italian newspaper, I think, weren't you? picture of you with your arms crossed, and you know, American author Joe Clifford, and that's pretty cool. I mean, it's bragging rights,
yeah, Marty,
and like you said,
Marty would have me take off my shirt, like he'd whisper in my ear, "All right, now take off your shirt," you know, to do the reading, because you know he was like most of the writers over here look like, you know, Carl over there. He's got one lazy eye, and like he's bald, like you. They like, I felt bad for Carl, but no, it was fun, you know. And I didn't mind doing that. If it sells a book, I mean, I'm happy to do it, you know.
You have to sell your tat sleeve along with the book,
yeah,
right?
It's all part
of the marketing plan. Yeah.
If
hey, listen, if it works,
do.
If it sells books,
yeah.
Baby, that's all that matters.
It was good. That's all that matters. Do what you got to do.
So did you find that the readers who attended your events had a really well-prepared set of questions for you?
Yeah,
way
I mean,
more
they
than
really,
maybe.
They,
way more than if you were doing, say, a book signing here, in the,
I'm not
the United
kidding,
States.
Like they would bring up stuff in Lamentation that I forgot I even put in there. All that little weird writer stuff you do.
Yeah.
That you just do because it's like, and they would bring it up and like, oh well, this is really the cause of Jay's problems, and this is really where it started. And talk about his relationship. And I was like, holy shit! Like, why? I don't even remember writing that. Like, wow, that's because after a while, I mean, as much as I loved writing Jay Porter, I sort of, even though I feel like every book got better, I mean, it's kind of hard not to get sour when symptoms don't go. Well, I mean, it didn't do what I wanted to do. So,
you know,
by the end, I kind of, you get a little despondent, and the Italian readers would have been like. That's what I wanted all along was somebody to get that out of it. So that was cool. That was really awesome. I mean, feel like it wasn't all for nothing, you know.
Now, is the whole series going to be published in Italian?
Well, they want the whole series. I know. I mean, the difference between like something like Junkie Love, which I own the rights to, is I don't own the rights to the Jay Porter stuff. Ocean View has that, and my former agency has that, and they have their own department. And so
I know
they tried to buy more of the books, and the foreign people said no, it wasn't enough money, which has nothing to do with me because and he went by Junkie Love. I'm like, all right, what do you want? Give me, I'll, whatever, man. Come back to Italy, I'll do it, you know. But I'm not a good businessman, and this is why you have agents, and this is why the agencies have foreign part, you know, people, because they know how much money you get and who gets what, and if you don't make good enough deal, nobody gets paid. So, you know, I respect that part of the process, but at the same time, you sound like Chunky Love, which is, you know, again, a smaller press, you know, battered suitcase that I can say, sure, you know, because now I'm friends with Marty and like whatever
sure.
he wants, I'll do, because I saw what he does with his small house and he's great, you know. It was just he really cares about books, really cares about that's my stuff, so I can do to be a part of that, I want to be a part of it.
Sure. You've closed out Jay Porter, correct? We're not going to see him again.
Well, I mean, I finished the fifth and final Jay Porter under contract, and I don't think Ocean View is champ to get the bid for another Jay Porter. So unless something happens miraculously with sales where all of a sudden, you know, we get picked up by Netflix or something, I don't think they want any more Jay Porter. Nobody's asked for more Jay Porter. And it feels like it was one of those, relationships that ended mutually, that we both were kind of done. I did what I wanted to do with the series, and I think they were happy that, you know, it's over now, to they can move on to other things. And so, I mean, that's not saying he lives or dies, but I guess it's telling you he doesn't die, because I could write another book if somebody wanted
right.
it, but I don't think he's going to ask for one, you know.
Well, but you haven't been sitting idly by. You've continued to write. I mean, you revised Junkie Love, because you sent me the first one when we first met, as a matter of fact. And I mean, I have all your books, so I know that you, in fact, have not only written, you know, Jay Porter.
No, I mean, Junkie Love, I added material. I added material after my brother died. I added a new end section. I added
right.
a new forward. I added a new afterward. But the text of Junkie Love, I didn't change anything. I mean, that's always going to be Junkie Love is Junkie Love. But, yeah, I mean, I have, The One That Got Away and Skunk Train and Occam's Razor out with, you know, coming out with Down and Out over the next year. And, of course, the last Jay Porter book. And then, I mean, there's you know, I mean, this is what I do full time. I'm a full time writer, so. I got a ton of books I write and edit and, a lot of free time in between.
How many books have you written since you finished up Jay Porter?
Well, I just wrote a new one called The Lake House Covenant. And that's the first thing I've written since the last JPEG. After my brother died, I took a year off. So I wrote the Porter book because, you know, I had to write the Porter book. But it was also pretty much JPEG 4 and 5 are really just one long book that are split into two. So it was kind of already written, at least in terms of.
Talking to your phone. I can't hear you. You got to stay in your phone. I can't hear you.
Yeah. Sorry. It could be because I'm in a weird section of the house. Yeah. So I had this other book that I, was planning on writing. And when the year, this arbitrary deadline I set up that I was going to start writing again, I just basically sat down and wrote it in, 30 days, just wrote a draft of it. Now I'm fixing it so it doesn't suck. But so that's the only thing I've written since Jay Porter. But, as always, I think it's the best thing I've done. And I hope somebody else will agree, and agents and publishers and all that stuff.
Let's talk about The One That Got Away. This is an interesting story because it involves a woman who survived a kidnapped murderer. And we think that the murderer is gone. He's done with. He's finished. But there's a little twist in the book. Where did this story come from? Because this is really different from what you usually write. She's not at first, God, I love this protagonist here. I'm in love with her. She's like so much, she's just straight up victim, survivor, really cool chick and everything. It's a little bit different, than most female leads. Where did you get the story from?
It's funny because the most common response I got is she's unlikable, which is the same thing I always got with Jay Porter, which made me realize that I don't have much interest, I guess, in writing likable people. I don't consider myself particularly likable. Maybe that's it. Maybe I just find, the flaws more interesting than something else. I don't know.
I think you're right that the flaws are important, but I said in a female lead character.
Yeah.
She's not the goody two shoes, and it made the book more interesting that way. So I'm not, castigating your reasons for creating this character. I'm simply saying, where did this story idea come from? Are you triggered by something happening? Happened in real life, or something you read, or is your imagination just going all the time with story ideas?
Well, yeah, it's going all the time, and you live inside your head, and that's the weird part of being a writer is you most of your life is spent with invisible people talking to you, and that's kind of a strange thing. But I mean, I'm also branching off into the whole domestic psychological thriller genre, which is just what I want to be writing. It's what I read, Wendy Walker and Mary Kubica and Jennifer Hillier and all those books, and that's what I want to read. That's what I read. Those are the books when I sit down and read them, I devour them. And when I find myself reading other kind of mysteries, I read them and I'm like, oh, okay. But when I pick up a Riley Sanger book, it's like, holy shit, this is amazing. So I realized that's what I like to read. That's what I want to write. So there's that aspect. There's also the germ of the story is from a Glamour magazine article that a buddy of mine in grad school had signed me up for a year subscription to Glamour as a joke. I don't even know who it was, but every month I'd get Glamour. And one month I was reading Glamour, and there was a story, and it was just so harrowing and dark and brutal. It was one of the most brutal things I've ever read. So much so that, when I finally went back and looked up the story, I had to make sure that I wasn't making it up. Anyway, for 10 years, I've had a story in my head of what happened to this girl in small town USA. And I've wanted to tell this story in a way that doesn't sensationalize a tragedy. Doesn't, undermine, what these people went through. And I found a way to tell a story through the eyes of Alex Salerno. And so there's a very real life crime at the heart of the book, but the book itself is, if all the Jay Porter stuff was about my dad and brother, really, Alex is based more on my mom and my mom's side of the family, and having the time I spent in upstate New York where I would go during my summers into Albany, Schenectady, Troy, Rensselaer, which are just the most depressing parts of America. And there's something really just kind of bleak and barren about landscapes. I like setting, obviously, Lamentation Mountain is as much character as any character in Lamentation, Jay Porter books. And this, I'd like to think Rain, New York is as much a character as Alex or Benny or any of those people.
Right. It's a fascinating story, and I enjoyed it immensely. I didn't think I was going to like it because I just, I just didn't like her in the beginning. And, but, you know, I'm a survivor of violent crime, so I work with victims of crime. So I understood that there is something that happens to you when you are a survivor, whether or not you have survivor guilt, or it just it completely changes your personality. And that, you know, I know for a fact.
Right. These are survival techniques we develop. And when you go through any kind of trauma, I think, or, you know, whether it's self-inflicted or it's the result of, you know, abuse, violence, or sexual. I mean, I think everybody has their own way of putting up the guards and the shields to go on because, you know, the world's never the same afterwards. And if you haven't had somebody there to protect you when you need to be protected the most, you find a way to do it yourself. And if you do it in a way that, you know, society at large is like, oh, that's very pleasing. I'm glad you did it that way. That's great. But if you turn into kind of a little more prickly, it's like, well, people are saying, no, I don't really approve of the way you decide to deal with this tragedy.
Exactly.
Those people are interesting to me, you know, and I think Alex is one of those people who, you know, the way her mom, you know, was and the way her cousin was and her aunt and the world she grew up in, and then to have this happen to her, this is how she's learned how to cope, because if she stays, you know, offensive and abrasive and, you know, a little more guarded on the outside, nobody can hurt her again, because those are the people who tend to be the ones who are the most vulnerable. That's why they have the walls erected, the highest and strongest,
right,
you know, because they know they can't take another hit.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's true in real life. So, and, you know, she's a very interesting character. I appreciated this story very much. I hope that listeners will go and get The One That Got Away. I wish that you would go on tour for this book too, Joe. I wish that there was the chance for you to go. I'd love to hear you read from your books. I know, you know, whenever I speak to authors, I always say, do you ever read? And they say, no. I know when you do your, you know, flash fiction and you're doing, you know, noir at the bar and everything, you guys read short stories, but I love hearing authors read from their books because
well, you're in the minority, I think. I think, you know, I've noticed, and I don't read at readings for this, like every other reader, author. I just saw Lou Burney do November Road and he did a great presentation, but I noticed like he doesn't read any section. And I think one of the reasons that nobody reads sections is because you can look out and see the eyes of people listening to you. And for every Pam Stack listening intently, I can tell you there's 15 others who look like they just want to be out of there. Like, it's very hard for people to gravitate and hold on to fiction, especially. You know, you got to be like, okay, so here we are in this part of the story. So here's what's happened before this. And it's just hard for them to glom onto what's being said. Unless, you know, it's just the prose is so poetic. And I like to think I write kind of a poetic prose, but at the same time, you know, I know it's with junkie love, I can keep people very wrapped and engrossed. But when I start going to fiction, it's tougher. It's a taller order. And I think talking about the book like we're doing here is a better selling point and a better use of my time than reading passages, because it's just like, okay, well, there was 2 pages and 6 minutes of my life, and I don't really know what the hell is going on.
You know, you know me, I go to a lot of writer events. I love going to writer events. So I was talking to Brad Taylor before you were on, and I told him the same thing. He said he's embarrassed to read in front of people because he's kind of shy, which is interesting, his whole demeanor and everything. You know, he's a military ops guy.
Has the single greatest author photo in the history of author photos.
Brad Taylor
has the best author photo. It's fucking amazing. It just is screams man. Like, holy shit, that dude is manly. And I met him, and he's not saying he's not manly. He's very manly. He shakes your hand, but he's like,
you know,
you can't. The only problem with that author pick, you can't live up to it in person. Like, you just can't. It's so just like rock star, movie
You
star.
Met him when we were at VoucherCon,
didn't you? I have met him.
Yeah.
He's a sweet guy. He's a really nice guy. And that was the first thing I said. I was like, holy shit, your author pick is amazing.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I know. It's like, that's just a day.
Oh, no.
But yeah, we should all try to get an author pick like this.
He doesn't like to read from his books. So I was telling him, I went to listen to Robert Crace over in Palm Beach, and he read from one of his Elvis books, his Elvis and Joe book. And it was fascinating to me because hearing the character's dialogue from the creator of the character and the dialogue totally changed my perception of the book. And I've read every single book that Bob Crace has written, every single one of them, just like I've read all of your books. I've read all Tom's books. I've read all Michael Conley's books. I've read all of Preston Child's books, you know, John Sanford, all those people. But it totally changed the way I saw and heard the characters in his books. And I loved it.
Yeah, it might be
and
a confidence thing, too. You know, like you said, Brad doesn't feel particularly – I mean, I don't feel particularly – I know, like, if you listen to Danny Gardner read something, I mean, he is so sure of himself when he reads. Like,
oh,
part of
great.
The allure is you get – yeah, because he – well, he commands, you know. Like, I
he
think
does.
A lot of writers were just not naturally – but, he had, you know, he has history in stand-up, and he's done – he knows how to deliver, and part of the performance is – you know, that's part of his performance.
Right.
Whereas a lot
right.
of writers, I don't think we feel particularly comfortable – doing that, and it automatically, you know, the little voice is going like, nobody likes this. It's kind of, so it makes it harder, and then you start talking quieter, and people aren't hearing you. So I think it's a whole kind of, you know, self-perpetuating problem. It's easier to avoid if you just don't read.
I wanted to say something about your prose, too, by the way. I like your prose, but instead of saying it's, what did you say, poetic? I think your prose is very intelligent, that you have to be an intelligent reader to read Joe Clifford, because it's such graceful writing. It's so intelligent and so graceful that, and that bothers me, because I want people to read your books. I don't want them to be scared off by an intelligently well-written book. You know, you're just so bloody good at it.
Particularly big words.
It's just the way you write, Joe.
I try to pare it down, but yeah, I mean, everybody gets something different out of it. I remember doing a reading with Zarina Zabriskie out here, and she was like, I like your writing because it's simple. It's simple. I was like, okay, I guess they write simple. So I don't know. I mean, I mean, your voice is your voice, right? I mean, but you can no more change
right.
your voice than you can change, like, your height, your, you know, whatever. I mean,
right.
it's just one of those things, like, you are who you are things, and,
right.
and I write the way I write. And so, you know, I hope it's accessible. I mean, I try really hard to write accessible prose because I don't want to lose anybody. I don't want to, you know, deliberately kind of be confusing. Like, I think some literary fiction authors almost take pride in, you know, losing their audience. I don't want to lose anybody. I want people to be along for the ride, and I want everybody to be there.
Absolutely.
And if I have to err on the side of simplicity, I will. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I've spent a lot of time
but
studying
I think
this
your
stuff,
books
and I would
are,
hope that it's
are really well written. They're just really well written. And you know, I want people to discover you who already don't know you. But so I asked Brad, you know, what does he tell people he does when they ask him his occupation? And he says that he's a security consultant. He says, I'm embarrassed to tell people that I'm a writer. What do you tell people, Joe? Because most people know you just.
Yeah,
yeah, people know you as a writer, and I know you as a musician.
Like Kelly, I'm a writer. First thing I do when you say, hey, I'm a writer, get the books out. I don't know. I mean, I figure if you're going to bleed for this stuff, you might as well get some of the credit for doing it. Like, I mean, one of the few things I take pride in is you know, everyone talks about writing a book. I'm going to write a book someday. Like, I wrote the book. Like, I mean, that's something. I don't know if it's or these are great books or good books or people are going to like them, but I wrote the book. You know, like, I mean, if you're going to write,
right.
you're right. That's what I do. You know, I have every day. I'm fortunate enough to do this for a living. So every day I sit down and that's what I do. I sit down, and I write and I work. If you get this opportunity, you got to make the most of it, which is why I think I produce a lot of books. But you know, that said, there's still a lot of, even with that, there's still a lot of downtime. You can only spend so much time writing before you start to go mad.
Right. Do you actually enjoy the writing of it all, Joe?
It depends which stage. I mean, the first drafts kind of suck, although writing a first draft on a train to Italy was kind of cool because I put in the earbuds and I would just type away, and it kind of came in a spurt, and that was kind of fun. The stage when you're going through and you're like, holy shit, this is just bad, you know. But I mean, I think every writer does that. Like, you have these various stages where you think you're wonderful and then you think you suck, and you think it's wonderful and you think you suck. And there is a stage, though, where the writing will get to a point where I know it's good and I feel confident in the book. Now, agent may not want it, publisher may not want it, may not sell it, but I know the book is to my standard at least. And when it gets there, then yeah, I really enjoy that part. I mean, I really enjoy sitting down and working on it there. Until there, it can be a little painful, but you know, it's not like working on a phone. So,
what are your checks and balances to make sure that you're a good writer?
It's an internal thing. It just clicks for me. I know when it's there. It's kind of like art. I know it when I see it. There's something happens in the process. All of a sudden, there's a rhythm and a flow to the language, and I find that I'm reading pages upon pages without getting stuck, kind of without getting bored. You know, early on, you're building a house in a lot of ways.
Sure.
I'm working on now, but I got building a house. But I mean, there is a lot of similarities between two things. You're building a foundation and the walls, and you're kind of getting everything, you know, to be presentable. But then the fun stuff I think most writers like to do is the window dressing. That's where you can make things really sing, and that's the stage of writing I really enjoy.
Interesting. Well, Joe, the book is out now. The One That Got Away is out now. Congratulations on the release. What do we see coming next? What's next?
Well, the book I'm working on now is called The Lake House Covenant, and I should be done with that in a few weeks, and then I send it off to some agents in New York, and they can tell me if they want it, and if they do, then we take it from there. Hope we get the big deal.
I hope you do, too. Joe, Happy New Year. I mean, saying that to you is kind of like spitting in the wind, I know. But, you know, as much as you can have a Happy New Year.
Yeah. I mean, it's been 2 weeks. I'm already fucking sick of 2019. No, it's fine. It's woefully disappointing. I'd expected more.
You got it.
It's not true. I won the golf tournament the other day. I came in first. First place golf tournament,
really?
Which is great. On $150, yeah. I was putting like a madman. One putting. It was fucking fantastic. Me and John Stewart. So, yeah, I mean, there's moments where, things, come up. And that was cool. So,
Joe Clifford, you are the best. I love you, buddy. I'm so glad to be back on the show.
Right.
And thanks
we'll
so much. Good luck with everything. We'll talk soon. Thanks for being with me, folks. I appreciate. Bye, Joe. I appreciate y'all being with me tonight, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Have a great evening, everyone.